So for our last class on conversion, what I wanted to discuss was the commandment to love the ger, love the convert. But specifically, I want to focus on a few questions. First, I want to understand the nature of that command, which undeniably it exists, but I want to figure out its parameters, how it relates to the general obligation to love our fellow Jew, our fellow human being. I want to deal with the question of who counts in that category of ger, of convert. And I want to then get to, for about half the time, the question of whether the existence of the command to love converts, whether that affects the question of what standards do we have to make someone a convert, right? It's the question we've sort of danced around a little bit, but that's the question I want to take up in the second half. Okay, so let's start in the first source. So these are the verses in Dvarim, and it reads as follows: For Lord your God is the God of gods and the Lord of lords, the great, mighty, awesome God, who does not show favor and does not take bribes, who executes judgment for the orphan and the widow and loves the stranger, the ger, giving him food and garments. You shall love the stranger, v'haftem et ha-ger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Now, the first question, there's clearly a command to love the ger, but what does the word ger mean? So we translate the word ger to mean convert. But what does the word ger literally mean in Tanakh, in the Torah, in the stranger, right, the sojourner? So I've translated here as the stranger, and just to evidence that, if you look in the next source, right, if a ger lives with you in your land, you shall not wrong him. A stranger who lives with you shall be for you like one born among you, and you shall love him as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. And most places where the word ger appears in Torah, or really in all of Tanakh, ger does not mean convert alone. It means anyone who is a stranger. Now, the classic rabbinic conception of this commandment, however, is that it refers to a convert. And there are verses where ger clearly refers to what we call a ger tzedek, meaning a full convert. Because of context, and we won't get into the detailed proofs for this, but there are several places where it is clear the word ger means convert. But the word literally means stranger. So, if that's the case, so now if I, first question first, and if I asked you, why is there a command to love the ger, and who goes under the category of ger, of stranger? So, what would you say, right? Who are we commanded to love when we say, v'ahavtem et ha-ger, love the ger, love the stranger? So, would you say that only refers to converts? Maybe not, right? Maybe not. Maybe it refers to all strangers, right? All people who are not in their comfort zone. Alternatively, if you wanted to say that the command referred, as Chazal understand it, to converts and only converts, so then you would say, well, how are the rabbis understanding the verses when they say, and you should love the stranger? Why would a convert be the ger we're talking about? Because he is the right, it is special case, the epitome of the paradigm of a stranger, because he's not just visiting from an outside city, an outside country. He's left his people, he's left his culture, he's left his nation, he's left his religion, he's left everything behind, especially if you think in the world the Jews are living in, where they, right, we think from the vantage point of we're used to having communities in the diaspora, right? It's a new phenomenon that there are bigger communities in Israel than there are outside of Israel. But if you're thinking in the time of the Torah, so once they go into Israel, Jews live in Israel. Non-Jews live in other lands. If someone converts, he's literally probably picking himself up and leaving wherever he happens to be, Moab or Midian or whatever, coming to the land, giving up his, right? You think again, as we mentioned last week, of Ruth, where she leaves her right, family. She leaves everything. Right? Naomi tells her, go back to your family and your homeland. And Jesus says, no, I'm taking your God. I'm taking your people. That's where I will be buried. So it's the ultimate stranger. You give everything up. So it could be, well, it normally means stranger. Maybe it means only the stranger in the full sense of the word. Yeah. Correct. She doesn't use the word ger. But we consider her a ger.
But she's not really a ger because she's never in the text referred to as a ger.
Right. She's not referred to as a ger or georet. Right. She comes. She joins the Jewish people, which emphasizes the point. Right. That it could be that the reason the rabbis were motivated to see ger as referring to the convert is because. It's the old, right? Not because the word ger only means convert, but because a person like Ruth, who leaves her family, enters the Jewish people, enters the Jewish religion, is the ultimate stranger. Okay. So, again, the classic rabbinic perspective is that ger means convert. And if you look at Maimonides, look at the Rambam in 3. So the Rambam explains, he's wants to answer really two questions. One is why only converts? And two, what is the relationship between the command to love the convert and the command to love Jews, right? Love everybody else, right? V'ahavta l'orecha kamocha zeklal gadol b'Torah. Love your fellow as yourself. Right? Why do you need a second command to love the ger, whoever the ger is? So the Rambam writes as follows, commandment number 206. So this, he says, is we are commanded to love each other as we love ourselves. I should have mercy for and love my brother as faithfully as I love and have mercy for myself. What I want for myself, I should want for him. And whatever I don't want for myself or my friends, I shouldn't want for him. Right? That is the mitzvah of ahavta l'reicha kamocha, love your fellow as yourself. Number 207 is we are commanded to love converts. Since the convert spoken of here is a ger tzedek, meaning a convert, right? It doesn't translate great from the Hebrew, but since the word ger here refers to a ger tzedek, meaning the word ger refers to the specific stranger who is a convert, he is included in the commandment for the entire Jewish people, right? He clearly is included in 206, right? The first part here, that you're commanded to love your fellow. You must love your neighbor. Nevertheless, since he has now entered the Jewish religion, God shows him additional love and added an extra commandment to love him. This is similar to the prohibition of mistreating him, where in addition to the prohibition regarding all Jews, you shall not mistreat one another, God also said, do not mistreat a convert. The Gemara explains that one who mistreats a convert transgresses both. We are similarly commanded to love him by both commandments. And I just note here that there are other prohibitions I didn't put, which is don't hurt the ger, emotionally harm the ger, which for the Rambam is his prohibitions 252, 253, for the Chinuch 63, 64. Yeah, Nancy.
We're commanded somewhere, I forget where, not to remind a convert that he or she is one. So why are we calling these people who are Jews by choice
So we're commanded not to remind them of that which they did when they were non-Jews. But we're going to come to that. We'll come to that in a second. But yes,
let me put my question, even if my framework wasn't perfect. It seems to me there are three categories of people here: the ger tzedek, and re'echa. But don't the ger tzedek and re'echa blend in together?
Yeah. So that's what the Rambam writes. The Rambam says the ger is clearly included in re'echa. But then the Rambam says, okay, but in addition to the regular command to love your fellow, we tell him, love him more.
Okay.
Right? And you can't violate the rights of anybody, but you have to, there's an extra prohibition to violate the rights or to harm emotionally the convert. So the Rambam, right, that's exactly what he says. He says, since the convert spoken of here is a ger tzedek, he's included in the commandment for the entire Jewish people. You must love your neighbor. Right? Nevertheless, since he has now entered the Jewish religion, God shows him an additional love. Right? So the way the Rambam deals with the question is that the convert we're talking about, first of all, the ger we're talking about, more specifically, is a convert. A ger tzedek. Not just a stranger. Presumably because he's left everything behind, or she's left everything behind, or Now, with the vote of the whatever the American Grammatical Association, they have left everything behind. The singular they. Okay, thank God we've brought that back. Right? Chaucer used it. Then it was out of grammar for a few hundred years, but it is a legitimate use of grammar. So they, the singular they, he or she. So the convert has left their family, their religion, their people, everything, and enter the Jewish people, and God loves them for it. So God tells them, look, for sure, the convert is Re'echa, is your fellow, is a fellow Jew. But there's someone who's left everything behind. So at some level, you have to compensate for that by showing them extra love. And if you aren't nice to a convert, you violate four prohibitions. The prohibition to love your neighbor, the prohibition to love the convert, the prohibition to harm your neighbor, and the prohibition to harm a convert. Meaning he's a Jew, plus there's an extra obligation to be really nice to the convert. Now, is this only quantitative? Meaning we should love everybody 5 points and we should love him 5 plus 5? I don't know. Something like that, right? We should really, really love him. So maybe, right? Maybe that's all it means, right? That you should really, really love the convert. But some have suggested that maybe it's more than that. For example, I just made a note here that Rev Zement in the Mitzvah HaMelech suggests as follows. He says, look, normally the command to love your fellow or not to harm your fellow focuses on action. And if there's somebody who you don't really get along with, you don't know him so well, you don't know her so well, so you don't deep down have love for them, you don't know them. But the question now becomes, how do you treat them? So the answer is, treat them as if you love them. But there's, with the average person who you don't know, you're not friends with, you have no connection to, we can't necessarily fault you for not loving them emotionally. So what the Torah tells you is, treat them as if you love them. Hopefully one day that will bring you to a real connection. But realistically, if there's a person that you meet once, you're never going to meet that person again, does that person really care whether deep down you love them? If you're nice to them and you treat them well? The average person doesn't care, right? I don't care. The average person on the street is polite because they have warm feelings toward me, or is polite because they're polite. I'm never going to see them again. What difference does it make? Right? Obviously, my family, my friends, I hope that they have a real connection with me. But a stranger off the street, I don't really care emotionally how they relate to me. It makes no difference in my life. So, v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. It's very nice. It's another Jew. You should love them. But if you don't really deep down love them, it's hard for you to cultivate an emotional connection to someone you don't know. Okay, just treat them well and that's fine. But a convert, you may not know them personally, but you know that this person has left their family, has left their life behind to join that which you hold dear, to join the people that you feel part of, to identify with the God that you believe in, to identify with the values that you believe in. So that convert, you may not know who they are, you may never see them again, but we're obligated not just to act as if we love them, but to actually cultivate love. Because it's not per se that you love this person in front of you, but if you realize what they've given up, you should get to the point where you can't help but love the person they are, whether or not you know them. So several suggest that when the Rambam says, when Maimonides says, that the Torah tells you that not only should you love a convert like you love everybody else, but you should love him more, it doesn't just mean love him times two. It's telling you that the average person off the street, there's no reason per se that you should emotionally feel a connection to them. All you got to do is be nice. But a convert, where you recognize what they've been through to get to where they are, that they stand for everything you believe in, Right? If you're a committed Jew, you're still not a Jew by choice. And they chose to be committed to that which you're committed to. You should love that ideal and therefore come to love them emotionally and not just act as if you love them or act nicely, but to actually really care about them and care about the struggles they've been through. So that's possibility one. That loving the convert is a second command. And the reason that there's a separate command is because it's demanding something more from us. Not just to be nice, but to actually care for them emotionally, because we recognize the struggles they've been through and what they've come to identify with. And the Rambam in 4 seems to go in this direction as well. And he says, God has commanded us concerning the love of a convert, just as he has commanded us concerning loving himself. The Holy One, blessed be, he loves converts, as it states, and he loves converts. And the Rambam says, why do you love a convert? Where does that obligation come from to feel emotionally connected to the convert? Your connection to God. Because if you love God, how can you help but love the person who gave up everything to join God? It's God loves converts because here's someone who's given up his history, given up his family, given up his nation, given up his religion to join the Jewish family. If you love the Jewish God and the Jewish faith, then how could you not emotionally be connected to this person even if you've never met them before? So that's possibility one. Possibility two is much less grandiose. And this comes back to what Nancy said before. Reb Yeruchim Fishel Perla argues that according to Reb Sadia Gaon wrote a poem where he summarizes the mitzvot, he summarizes the commandments. And Reb Yeruchim Fishel Perla wrote a book commenting on this poem, trying to figure out what Reb Sadia Gaon believed was counted in the 613 mitzvot. Right? We know there are 613 mitzvot, but we don't know exactly how to categorize things, because sometimes something can be counted as 1, 2, 3, and trying to actually work out the numbers is a bit complicated. So Reb Sadia Gaon seems not to have a separate commandment to love converts. So then Reb Yeruchim Fishel Perla says, okay, if there isn't a separate command to love converts, then why over and over does the Torah say, love the convert, love the convert, love the convert? If there isn't a separate command to love the converts, then why would the Torah tell it to you over and over again? So one possibility is because you're supposed to love them more. The other possibility is that maybe you should love them more, but the danger is you're going to love them less. So Reb Yeruchim Fishel Perla says, no. Why do you love a convert? Not because there's a separate command to love the convert. Why do you love the convert? Because you're supposed to love every Jew. And he is now a Jew. She is now a Jew. But why does the Torah say over and over and over, love the convert, love the convert, love the convert? You know what happened in Egypt. Love the convert, love the convert, love the convert. Because you know by nature. Yeah, by nature, people who aren't born into a community, born into a country, born into a family, trying to get them to be treated as equals, forget better, trying to get them to be treated as equals is an uphill battle. So the Torah needs to tell you over and over, not love him more. It has to emphasize that despite the difficulty in loving the stranger, loving this ger, as much as you love anybody else, you have to do it. Right, just imagine the scene, right? You know, Toronto is a good example because people tend to have lived here for a long time. At least that's what I've seen from my visits to Toronto over the years. I mean, my wife's family is from Toronto, has been here since like the turn of the 20th century, right? So you grew up with, right? You grew up with your friends. Your parents grew up with their friends. Their parents grew up with their friends. Like, not everybody, some people. I'm not me, I'm from New York, right? In New York, this is not true, but okay. But at least some people, right? My wife's family. So her grandmother was the bridesmaid at her future michutanim, or future, you know, her, you know, future michutanim's wedding, because they were friends, and then their kids got married to each other, right? So they go back generations, and then somebody comes from
New York,
right? Who isn't just not from Toronto, but he was born a non-Jew, converted from Catholicism at 45, right? And then shows up in your shul, and here are the people you've been with in shul for how many years? Your parents, your family, and here somebody comes, even if they were a Jew, from the other side of Toronto, it would be hard to bring them into your clique. For sure, that person grew up with a different culture, came from a different country, and now they're joining. It's the Torah has to tell you, just to get them into your clique, the Torah has to tell you do that, because that's not obvious and it's not an easy thing to do. So here now, so far, we have two possibilities. We have Rabbi Rucham Fishel Perla in the name of a Sadigon that's saying, no, there is no separate command. The reason the Torah tells you over and over and over, love the converts, because that it's really hard to even treat that person as an equal. The Rambam says, no. Not only do you have to treat them as an equal, treat them as more than an equal. Why? According to the direction we've developed here, because you have to emotionally love them, identify with them, because they've come to give up everything to believe what you believe. That calls for more than being nice, that calls for absolute love. Parenthetically, Rav Sadia Gaon has something interesting, that there does seem to be a special command aimed at the courts to treat them as equals. Not amongst normal people. That seems to just be in the normal command, according to Rav Sadia Gaon, of loving your fellow. But the courts do have a separate command. And part of, at some level, that makes a lot of sense. Because one of the places where, to use the legal example, where immigrants are particularly subject to abuse is in the legal system, because they don't necessarily have the same rights. Right? Before they get citizenship, they really don't have the same rights. Even when they get citizenship, they may not know how to claim their rights. In the legal system, there's a particular danger of abuse. So the Torah, according to Rav Sadia Gaon, tells you that there is a special command on the courts to ensure that these strangers, these converts who are entering our legal system, don't get treated differently. And that's really a hard thing to ensure. And that's why the Torah has to tell you, make sure that they get treated as equals. Okay. Now, so that's question one, right? What is the nature of command? We basically have two possibilities. Either the Torah is emphasizing love them as an equal and that's not obvious, or no, the Torah actually demands more of you when you're talking about a convert. Okay, that's question one. Now, question two. Is this command, in fact, limited to converts? So as we noted, in the verses, it sounds like if you'd ask me without looking at the Talmud, without looking at the Mishnah, without looking at the rabbinic works, who is a ger? I would have said a ger is a stranger, anybody who's a stranger. The rabbinic conception is that it refers to a convert. But there's still two possibilities. One is that the rabbis understood that when the Torah said ger, it meant only the ultimate stranger, who is the convert. Everybody else is just, you have to be nice to them, but you don't have to show them extra love because, okay, so they come from a different city. They'll deal. So you have to be nice to them, but they're not the ultimate stranger, so they're not the ger we're referring to. Possibility two is that no, the rabbis never meant to tell you that the love of a ger only refers to a convert. It's just that he or she is the ultimate stranger. But anybody who's a stranger, anybody who's uncomfortable, is out of their element, is also a ger and also deserves your extra love. It's just that the rabbis weren't telling you, forget about the literal meaning of the verse. They're just telling you, keep in mind that the ultimate stranger is the convert. So that seems to be the position of the Sefer HaChinuch in 6, and explicitly the Chafetz Chaim in 7. So Sefer HaChinuch, which is an anonymous work from the medieval period, writes as follows. We should derive from this precious mitzvah, from this precious command, that one should have mercy on a person in a city that is not his birthplace and the place of his family, as we see that the Torah warns us to have mercy on all who need help. So the chinuch seems to think the primary mitzvah is converts. But once the Torah tells you that you're supposed to show extra care to the convert because he's the ultimate stranger, you should also derive secondarily that you should care about people who are, you know, immigrants who are vulnerable. The Chofetz Chaim, right, Yisrael Meir HaKohen, living in the 20th century, beginning of the 20th, end of the 19th, beginning of the 20th century, goes farther and he says, no, the meaning of ger here is anyone who came from another land or city to dwell here, and even more so a convert. He says, no, when the rabbis said that a ger meant a convert, they didn't mean only a convert. They meant especially a convert. But it really means, when it says love the ger, it doesn't mean just love the convert. It means love all people who are out of their comfort zone. Make sure to care about all people. A convert is out of all of his comfort zones. He's out of his family, he's out of his place, he's out of his nation, he's out of his religion. So show special love to him. But also show love to the person who moved from New York to Toronto. Be nice to them, right? They didn't grow up here, right? Okay, I'm married into a Toronto family. I have a support system. But someone who moved, right, two New Yorkers who moved to Toronto, it's hard to break into the Toronto group. And so the Chofetz Chaim says, when we say love the ger, we mean love all strangers, immigrants, right? People who moved from the city over, from the other shul, from the other school. All of those people are included. The convert is the ultimate expression of the person who's a stranger, who's not his element. But the mitzvah tells you, the commandment tells you, love all people who are out of their comfort zones, who are out of their place where they had a clique, where they had a support system. Okay, so that's question two, right? Question one is this telling you to love them more or just emphasizing to love them like everybody else? Question two is, who gets to be counted in this? Only converts, or is that just a paradigm and really all strangers, all people who don't have a support system, you have to show extra care to? Question three. What happens if you aren't nice to a convert? You aren't nice to a convert. Now, do you violate the command, the special command of not hurting a convert or not loving a convert? Let's say you aren't nice to that person. For sure, if you insult a convert, this coming back to what Nancy said, right? You insult a convert because they're a convert, right? You say, you're not a real Jew, right? You don't know what it's like to grow up Jewish. You'll never really understand us. So for sure, that's called violating, right? Not loving a convert and hurting a convert, because you're hurting convert qua convert, right? You're hurting him because he or she is a convert. But let's say that's not the case, right? We all want to be nice to everybody else, but we all gossip and we all hurt people's feelings and we all get into fights. So let's say you happen to get into a fight with a person in your shul who is a convert. Okay, so you weren't nice. You violated the command against insulting people, of hurting people. You violated the command of v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, of loving your fellows yourself. But are you going to get beaten over the head a second time because the person happens to be a convert? You weren't mean to them because they were a convert. You just happened to lose your temper. So we all lose our temper. It's a problem. We try to improve it. But is God in his heavenly court going to say, you're going to get hit twice because not only did you lose your temper, but you lost your temper against a convert? So what would you say?
No.
No. Or? The only two possibilities. No is the obvious answer. No is to say, look, when it says love the convert, don't hurt the convert, it means qua convert. But if you happen to lose your temper, right, it's, you know, I have a good friend who is a convert. One of the things we say is that, you know that someone has really integrated into the community when they're comfortable complaining about the community like everybody else, right? Because, right, so at some level you would say, look, no, because if you are mean to the convert, not because they're a convert, but because you sometimes lose your temper with your friends, So that's not called violating the mitzvah of being a convert, because that shows they're part of the group. They get hurt like everybody else. You're not walking on eggshells around them anymore. Right? So part of us would want to say, no, you don't violate. Because, you know what? If the mitzvah is to integrate them fully into our society, at which point you're not walking on eggshells and you're willing to lose your temper with them like you do with any other friend. So they've made it. And that seems to be what the Sefer HaChinuch says. In 8, he says, one violates the command if he causes them pain because they are converts. Or the special commandment isn't. Right? It's not like I happen to yell at a convert and I violate double. No. If I tell him you'll never fit in our community because you didn't grow up with us, so yeah, you violated the command. But if you lose your temper at some level, no. So they're just another Jew, and they've made it. Right? You're not walking in eggshells. You lost your temper. You lost your temper. Okay, you shouldn't have lost your temper. But you didn't hurt them because they're converts. But there is another possibility. And here I think the best articulation is in the Akedat Yitzchak in 9 of Rabbi Yitzchak Arama. And he says something which I think is very sharp. And he says, look, let's say you have somebody who's a convert. And you lose your temper with them. I don't know, right? Pick your right. It's Passover, right? Tensions are high, right? And you invite over a few friends, and one of them happens to be a convert. Okay, and you know you've set up the table perfectly, and I don't know. They put the you ask them, can you set up the Seder plate, right? And they or set up the matzah plate, and they. You know, break the matzah. I don't know, whatever happens, okay? So, and then you lose your temper, right? Or they set up the Seder plate wrong. Okay, whatever, tensions are high, you lose your temper. It's a minor thing. You didn't lose your temper with that person because they were a convert. But what's the person going to think, right? They set up, you ask them to set up the Seder plate, and they accidentally set it up wrong, could have happened to anybody. And then you lose your temper, right? Didn't you know that the egg goes here and the, I don't know, whatever, right? What are they going to feel? Why are you getting angry with me? Because he's a convert. Is that true?
What if it is true?
So if it's true, fine. But even if it's not true, they're going to think it is. Right? So he says, 9. Treat the ger with a bit more patience, for the soul of the convert is distressed as he's in a foreign land, and he will think that all pressure or oppression that is done to him is because he is a ger, because he's a convert. So possibility one is, no, you don't violate more for the convert. You violate like anybody else if you're just losing your temper because you're losing your temper. But if Yitzhak Arama says, no, get for a moment, get into his head or her head. You know, you're asking them here to help out set up the Seder. This is not their comfort zone. And if you lose your temper, they're going to think you're losing your temper because they're a convert. It may not be true, but that's going to be their tendency. Right? If you don't, you know, count them, right? The example you'd always give to high school kids. So this is where I teach the high school kids, so it's in my mind, right? You don't pick them for a pickup game of baseball or whatever, right? They're going to think it's because... Maybe it's because they're not good at sports. But they're going to think it's because, well, you're not really one of us. You didn't grow up with us. And they're hypersensitive to it. So what Yitzchak Arama says is, no, even when you just lose your temper or you aren't nice to a convert, you do violate double. Because you may not be doing it because they're the convert, but that's not how they view it. When you're not amongst your social group and your support system, you always think that the other person's out to get you, even if they're not. And therefore, he says, you have to go out of your way to be nice, not because you're doing it because they're a convert, but because they're going to think that you are. And that's why you violate double. Yeah?
Is that good? Can you extrapolate that for the relationship between a Baal Shuva and a born person?
Yeah, right. I think, especially in light of this, the Chavetz Chaim, that the ger here isn't just a convert, but is anyone out of his comfort zone. That yes, that would right. And the Talmud is explicitly going back to the passage that Nancy referenced before, doesn't just say that you can't remind, you know, can't go to a convert and say, oh, you're really a non-Jew, says the same thing about a sinner. Right, that if someone used to sin and now is a Baal Tshuva, not in the modern sense of Baal Tshuva, like they used to be religious, they used to be not religious and now they are, but in the Talmudic sense of Baal Tshuva, is they used to do a sin and now they don't do that sin, in which sense we're all Baalei Tshuva, right? We all have repented from something. We've all improved. You know, if someone's worked on their temper for 10 years, they used to have a really bad temper, but now they've been really calm and they lose their temper once, right? And you say, oh, you always do that, and you pretend that the last 10 years of their improvement haven't existed, right? Then that's what the Talmud says is a violation of, right, insulting and hurting a Baal Tshuva. It's someone who has improved themselves and you're making as if they never did. So yes, I think the same thing would be true, because they're always, right, they're always worried that you don't, right, treat them the same because of where they used to be. I think that's, according to the position of the Chavetz Chaim in 7, yes, I think that's true, right? This would not just be true of converts, it would be true of anybody who has left whatever part of the community they are and entered yours. Okay. Now I want to move from this sort of general discussion about loving the convert to the politically charged one, which is, okay, how do we get from here to, and do we get from here, does this tell us anything about how we treat not converts, but prospective converts? Okay? So here I ask, okay, why, or not why, is there a commandment to accept converts? Yes or no? What would you say?
No.
No? I hear no's and I heard a yes. Good. No's and yes. That's what I want. Okay. So, in 10, Shimon ben Tzemach Duran writes, why does no one include in the count of mitzvot the acceptance of converts, which is a unique obligation on the convert to accept them and not push them away? As it says in Yevamot, and we'll see that in a second, my opinion is that it should be counted separately. The Zohar Arakia, Rav Shimon ben Tzemach Duran, writing in the 14th century, says yes. There is a separate command to accept converts. How does he know? So if you look at 11, we've seen this passage again. We've seen this passage, so we'll see it again. Our rabbis taught, if at the present time a man desires to become a proselyte, he is to be addressed as follows. What reason have you for desiring to become a proselyte? Do you not know that Israel at the present time are persecuted and oppressed, despised, harassed, overcome by afflictions? If he replies, I know, and yet am unworthy, he is accepted forthwith and is given instruction in some of the minor and some of the major commandments. And if he is informed of the punishment, and as he is informed of the punishment for the transgression of the commandments, so is he informed of the reward granted for their fulfillment. Right? A person comes and wants to convert, you tell them about the commandments, reward, punishment, you give them a synopsis of what it means to be a convert.
No, 3 times asked.
What?
No,
you turn them away, but once you get past the turning away, right, I'm not giving the whole passage, right? You turn them away, you always try to dissuade, but once they come, okay, so you dissuade them 3 times, I cut that out, that's in the ellipsis. Okay.
The standard is, I think, that if a person comes to the rabbi who wants to convert, and the reason is marriage to a Jew, the rabbi who says this is
correct.
Not good enough for conversion.
Right, that is standard. If someone wants to convert for marriage, the rabbi will push them away. Yes. So then he writes, he is not, however, to be persuaded or dissuaded too much. They say, however, it's true that you should try to dissuade the convert, but not too much. Now, what does that mean? Okay, whatever too much is, right? The 3 times you do the effort, but you don't keep pushing and pushing and pushing. You don't, right, run and grab them. You don't try to persuade them, but you don't dissuade them too much. And if he is accepted, but once you've decided, after the requisite dissuading, that he is sincere, he's circumcised forthwith. And then the Talmud continues. He is not, however, to be persuaded or dissuaded too much. And Rilazar said, what is the scriptural proof? It is written, and when she saw that she was steadfastly minded to go with her, talking about Ruth, she left off speaking unto her, right? Naomi tried to dissuade Ruth, but once she saw that Naomi was steadfast, she said, okay, come with me. So Rav Shimon ben Tzemach Duran says, look, what does the Talmud say? It's true you dissuade them, But once you've decided that they're sincere, you accept them forthwith. He says, why do you accept them immediately? Once you've decided they're sincere, because there's a command to accept converts. Okay. However, the majority of rabbinic voices did not count a separate command to accept converts. But that doesn't mean that there isn't a command to accept converts. It just means that it doesn't come from a separate command. Okay, but if it doesn't come from a separate command, then why should one accept converts? So here I have two possibilities. One is the position of Yerucham Fishel Perla in 12. He says, in my opinion, we can simply say that it is based on the commandment to love God. As the Sifrei explains, love Hashem your God, make Him beloved to people like Avram your father. As it says, the souls He made in Haran. This teaches that Avram would convert them and bring them under the wings of the Shekhinah. So he says very simply, he says, there is a command to accept converts, sincere converts. And what is the command? Love God. And as we already saw for the Rambam, why should you love converts? Because it's an expression of loving God. If you love God and you see someone who sincerely wants to be part of this faith, then you should accept them. So you don't need a separate commandment. It's a subset of the command to love God. And if you look in 13, when the Talmud describes what it means to love God, the Talmud says as follows, "And thou shalt love thy God." What does that mean? That the name of heaven be beloved because of you. If someone studies Scripture and Mishnah and intends on the disciples of the wise, the disciples of the wise, is honest in business, speaks pleasantly to persons, what do people then say concerning him? Happy the father who taught him Torah, happy the teacher who taught him Torah. Woe to people who have not studied the Torah, for this man has studied the Torah. Look how fine his ways are, how righteous his deeds. Of him does Scripture say, and he said unto me, thou art my servant Israel, in whom I will be glorified. And the Talmud says, in general, the command to love God isn't just to emotionally have a connection with God, but to be the type of person that makes other people love God. Because they look at him and say, hey, that person claims to have a commitment to God. And that's part of what makes them a good person. I want to be like them. Because if their God tells them to be this type of person, their God must be a great God. And that's how the Talmud in general understands the command to love God, to make God beloved. So Rabbi Yerucham Fishel Perla says, yeah, and that's the same reason you should accept sincere converts. Because if you love God, and here's a person who you've tried to dissuade them, and they said, no, no, no. Right? Ameich ami ve'elokayich elokai. Your nation is my nation, your God is my God, as Ruth said. So take them. Because if you love God, then you love the people who love God. But Rabbi Yehuda bar Barzilai, in 14, Rabbi Yehuda of Barcelona, says something different. He says, you know what? I think there is a command to accept the convert. And what is it? The same command to love the convert. Now, if I asked you, the command to love the convert, should it intuitively apply to the prospective convert? No. Because he isn't a convert yet, or she isn't a convert yet. But Rabbi Yehuda Barzilai says no. It seems from his words, this is Perlo explaining Rabbi Yehuda Barzilai. It seems from his words that he believes that included in the mitzvah, and you shall love the ger, is also the mitzvah to accept converts and bring them under the wings of the Shekhinah. For he wrote, let he who comes to convert take refuge in your shade, when he says, in you, God, I have taken refuge. You must say that even though when he comes to you, he is not yet a convert, nevertheless, since with this acceptance he converts, we refer to him, and you shall love the ger. So the way Rav Perlo explains Rav Yehuda Barzilai, Rav Yehuda of Barcelona, is that no, the same command that tells you to love the convert is the same command that tells you to accept them. But why would that be the case? Right? I understand. You should love the person who has converted and is now a stranger in your community. But why does that tell me I should go and love the person in anticipation of him entering the community? Right? What did Naomi say to Ruth? Go home. You'll be comfortable. Once she decided, no, I'm coming to Jewish people, fine. Now you have to treat her well. But why would it be a violation of loving the convert to tell them, why do you want this? Stay where you're comfortable. Stay with your family, with your religion, your people, your nation. How could it be a violation of loving the convert to tell the convert, look, don't join us. You have a family, you have a people. Why come and be a stranger? Why come and be part of this nation that's so hard to be a part of? Right, right. That's what we tell him. We're despised. We're persecuted. How is that not called loving the convert? Right? Once he's decided, I'm coming. She's decided, I'm committed. Fine, love them, care for them. But how much more could you care for them than tell them, don't do this to yourself. It's going to be hard. So here, Rav Avram Sherman, in an article, suggests as follows, which I think is a nice formulation. I didn't put it, but I'll say it outside because we've already developed the basics. And he said, look, he said, why do you love the convert? What did Maimonides say? Why should we love the convert? What did Rav Yochanan Fischer Perle just say? Why do you love the convert? Because you love God. And if you, so how can you say that loving the convert includes to even people who haven't yet converted? For this reason. If the reason we love converts is because they are committed to God in that unique way that only someone who's a Jew by choice can be, then when they come to you and you've gone through the dissuading process and they've shown themselves to be committed, then they've already shown that commitment. They've already shown that love of God. And the reason we love the convert is because it's an expression of loving God. Then we should love them too, even before they've gone through the formal process of circumcision and going to the mikvah and immersing. Because at that moment, once they've shown that love, that commitment to God, so they are already, for these purposes, a convert. Right? They're not formally a convert. But the love that we show them should already start to flow. When you, if you ever talk to someone who's been involved in conversion, they become very close to the conversion candidates who are under their, right, under their supervision, because they've seen them. They brought them in for Shabbos. They've seen them grow in commitment, and they've seen the excitement on their face as they slowly learn what it means to be a Jew, and they become their adoptive parent because they brought them into this new life. And even before they convert, seeing that love for God, for the religion, for the faith, for the people, develops the connection that you have with them before or after they technically convert. Okay. But now, the question becomes, let's assume that's true. So now if I ask you, should the mitzvah, the command to love the convert, affect the standards we use when deciding whether someone should or should not be a convert? That's a loaded question. Yes, I know that's a loaded question.
It's a
yeah?
Very contemporary question.
It is, and the source I'm about to read is very contemporary. It's about, yeah, it's like 2015.
Rabbis are discredited by judicial courts in
all places. Right, so we all know that right now we're in heated political ground. Right? We know that. So but now I ask, okay, but when we argue for more open or more closed standards, is avar ager, is loving the ger our address? Should it affect the standard? Should the fact that we're supposed to love the convert affect it?
Whose standards is the question?
Well, I'm saying, should it affect it? Right, we haven't talked about what the standard should be, but should it be a factor?
Should it be a factor who's in charge? Should it be a factor?
If we love the convert, we love the convert.
So one possibility is to say, look, once you say that loving the convert is even anticipatory, so then, right, Yeah, I mean, what we should, it should affect our standards. We should say, look, whatever the standard was, maybe we should lower it, whatever, right? That's one maybe intuitive grasp, right? Intuitive position. But there's a problem. Because if what we just said is true, which I feel like there's a lot of truth in what we in what we've developed, that the reason you love the convert is because he expresses or she expresses a love of God, that might ironically tell you that what? It does affect the standards, but in which direction? Up, right? Because it might tell you that, wait a second, if the reason you love the convert is because they've shown a level of commitment, then they need to show that level of commitment. And if they don't, right, if someone is just being shooed in because, right, let's take a case where there's no sincerity, right, let's leave for a second the middle cases, but let's say there's no sincerity, right, someone doesn't care about Judaism at all, but, right, they don't really care about being Jewish, but they want to get married, right, the classic case, they want to get married, but neither spouse really cares whether they're Jewish, but the parents care whether they're Jewish. They go through a pro forma conversion with no commitment before, no commitment after, and no love for the Jewish people, and no love for God. So would you say that because we're supposed to love the convert, we should shoo them in? Right? According to the analysis, no. Because if the reason you love the convert is because they've shown commitment to God or to the Jewish people, and they're not committing, their spouse isn't committing, their Jewish spouse isn't committing, they're committing why? Because their in-laws are going to be upset if they're technically not Jewish. They say, I don't care about any religion, so fine, I'll immerse in the mikvah. Big deal. It won't change my life at all, before or after. This is not your reason, right? Avar ager, loving the ger, is not going to help you, right? You may think that you can be lenient because of how you understand the standards that are demanded to begin with, but this mitzvah, this command, is not going to tell you to be more lenient. Because if what makes you love them, what makes you want them, is because of that commitment they show to God, and you have someone who wants to be pro forma, so that wouldn't, right, that wouldn't work. Right? Now that doesn't mean, right, that doesn't mean, I want to clarify what I'm not saying, that doesn't weigh in on what the standard should be. It just means that this command is not the address for arguing that we should be more lenient. Right? There are people in Israel who say the reason you should be more lenient is because these people are committed to the Jewish people, even if not the Jewish faith. That's a separate argument, but it doesn't connect to this argument. There are other people who say that commitment is determined by the moment they convert. And if they show commitment at that minute, even if you have no reason to believe they'll be committed in the future, that's sufficient. Again, that may be true, that may not be true. But that's not an argument based on this. Right? And I just want to look for a second at 15. Right, right. Benjamin Samuel, this is a rabbi in Boston, says, he says, arguably, there should be a normative application of Yehuda Barcelona's position, even if it's only a suffix de oraita, a doubt concerning a commandment of biblical force, charging us to deal extra kindly and avoid distressing bona fide conversion candidate. It should also be noted that treating a ger benevolently and generously doesn't necessarily mean shortcutting his or her process, which very likely would be a benefit that turns out to be a liability. He says, not only this, but if you shortcut it, we can argue from today till tomorrow whether certain segments of the community should accept more conversions. But if realistically your conversion will not be accepted by large swaths of the community, if realistically that's true, then converting them is doing them no favors. That doesn't mean you shouldn't argue with the segments of the community that have standards you think are wrong. Right? But imagine the scene, right? You can say that it's wrong what they're doing in Israel, that they only accept, right, Haredi, Rabbanim, and certain members of the modern Orthodox community conversion. You can argue and say that's wrong. But if someone comes to you, right, and you are, and you know you're not going to be accepted by the Rabbanut, so you can think that's wrong. But if they come to you and say, I'm moving to Israel, I want to be able to marry according to the Rabbanut, that's what I want in life, and you say, well, the Rabbanut, I don't agree with the Rabbanut, so I'm going to convert you by my standards, and the Rabbanut isn't going to accept it. Have you done them a favor? No. That doesn't mean that you, if you think the Rabbanut is wrong, you shouldn't fight for the Rabbanut to be reformed. But it means that you have to be honest with them and say, look, I may think you're a legitimate convert, but until we've changed the political landscape, I'm not going to hurt you by pretending that I've converted you in such a way you'll be married in Israel, because it's not true. That may be a problem. But you have to be honest with the convert, right? You can't shortcut their, right? You can't shortcut it if you know they're not, right? Again, that doesn't, right? What I want to just point out is it doesn't weigh in on whether the current situation is right or wrong. It just emphasizes that those are really two different questions, right? The question of the standards that should exist and the question of how you go about dealing with them are not necessarily the same question. You can at the same time say, I think the Rabbanut is incorrect, the standards they hold, and say, but until it's reformed, I'm going to encourage you to get a conversion that will be recognized, because your dream is to get married in Israel, and I can't help you because the Rabbanut is in power. That's a legitimate thing to say. It's a painful thing to say, but it's a legitimate thing to say. And he says, however, there may be a halachic justification to treat differentially the various type of conversion candidates discussed at the opening of this paper and be considered more fully below on the basis of consideration of the mitzvah avodah ger. At the very least, all rabbis involved in matters of conversion should take to heart Rabbi Yosef's Cairo codification of the concern of distressing a convert. One must be exceedingly careful when it comes to grieving a convert, whether through his person or possessions, for we have been warned concerning this commandment in many places in the Torah. So Rabbi Samuel's notes, he said, look, you should be nice. You should care. That's for sure. And you should do everything you can for the convert. But just because we care about converts doesn't automatically mean that you lower standards and shortcut the process. Because that doesn't help them. Right? It may not help halachically if you think that you're lowering standards that are to the point where they're incorrect, you don't have integrity. But even if you think you're right, even if you are right, if the political process is such a point where it needs to be reformed but it hasn't yet been reformed, it still doesn't help them. So, it's a very complicated and very touchy matter, because on the one hand, yes, you want to love them, you want to show care. And you know what? You don't want to force standards that you don't think are even necessary on converts. But on the other hand, you want to help them integrate into the community, and if there's a current political reality, which, whether you agree with it or not, that required using different standards, you also have to take into account the reality on the ground. And that's a painful thing to say to somebody, right? And you can say, I will be with you. And if they say, I don't care, I'm willing to convert with you, knowing the Rabbanut won't accept it, as long as you come with me and fight for me in the Rabbanut. So that's legitimate, right? If you tell the person the stakes and you say, I'm willing to convert you because I think it's legitimate, but the Rabbanut won't accept you, but I'll fight for you, but know that I may not win. So that may also be legitimate. But again, it's something you need to take into account. Okay, 16 we're not going to get to. But I'll say it outside. 16, Reb Chaim David Halevi makes a very interesting argument. He argues that the reason that there isn't an explicit command to convert is because he thinks that it is legitimate that there are varying standards of when to desire or not desire conversion. If you look halfway through, he says, nevertheless, there's a place to ask, why is it not written as an explicit mitzvah in the Torah? He says, however, because the Torah did not write it explicitly, it is hinted that it is not an obligatory mitzvah, regardless of circumstances, and not every time that a non-Jew comes to convert is the rabbinical judge obligated to convert him. Rather, every judge and religious leader in his generation has been given the discretion to decide according to his judgment whether to be more lenient than the normal standards or whether to be more strict. I should mention in closing that both the court that are lenient regarding conversion and those which are strict, they're all acting with the intent to serve God properly, we hope, and they are acting according to understanding of their conscience. And he says there is built in a certain understanding that there is a subjectivity, that there is a spectrum, and we do have to respect that. In 22, Ramosha Feinstein actually argues that at least in certain circumstances, loving the ger does in fact require us to reassess halachic standards, at least in terms of what they can do once they are converted, and look for leniency, but that's a discussion for a different time. But again, what I want to summarize at the last point is that this is a very loaded political topic. It's very difficult, but we have to not fall into the trap of feeling bad and therefore blurring the lines of what question we're asking. Right? The question of what standards we should have are not necessarily the same of how we should treat a convert. Right? Because you can say that I should treat you with respect, but I still think the standards should be higher or lower. And the question of what standards I think are sufficient is not the same as whether it's a good idea to convert someone who you know is not going to be accepted by other segments of the community. Again, you may think that's wrong. You may think that the standards are too high in the rest of the community, but if their desire is to get married to the Rabbanut, until you've managed to fight for their rights in the Rabbanut, then you have to be honest that at the moment your conversion won't be recognized. That may be unfortunate, but again, part of loving the ger is making sure they're integrated and dealing with is on the one hand striving to improve the situation on the ground, but the other hand trying to make things as good as possible them for in the reality that currently exists. So I know this part was much more controversial. I just wanted to outline sort of the discourse. Again, I'm not taking positions of what standards there should be, who's right, who's wrong, but trying to just to outline the types of questions we should be asking, the types of issues that go into it, even without drawing firm conclusions, which is for rabbis of a much greater stature than me.